My guest in this episode is Hong Kong-based Mike Hurl. Mike has a Bachelor of Southeast Asian Studies and a Master's in Politics and Security. He began his career as a research analyst for a London-based global insights firm that focused on Asian markets. A three-month secondment to Hong Kong ultimately ended up with him moving there nearly 20 years ago and embarking on a career with KPMG, where he is currently the global director responsible for driving the sales, brand, and community pillars for their turnaround and restructuring services. So welcome to the podcast, Mike.
Thanks, Graham. Great to be here.
So I'm really interested. You've got such a fascinating career. And one of the things that really stood out for me from your CV was that you've studied politics, security and economic development with a focus on the Asia Pacific. I mean, that's quite a, you know, full on big subject to study. Why did you study that?
Right. Thanks, Graham. Yeah, I think first of all, I'd taken three different subjects at A level, which were all of interest to me, economics, French and history. But I couldn't quite see myself taking any one of those singularly as a degree. So I started sort of thinking a bit left field around what would be a really interesting degree that could give me an edge in the future, but also keep me interested and passionate in learning something new. And, you know, I had some family and some friends who traveled around Asia, and that piqued my curiosity around Asia. And it was really nothing more than that. So I saw this opportunity to do a degree in Asian studies, which had a little bit of a hybrid of all of those things. It was learning languages, it was economics, and it was history and culture, anthropology, sociology. So it's a social sciences degree. And I turned up in Tull University to be greeted by a room of classmates who were all very widely traveled. Some of them were more mature students. It was a very unusual group. It wasn't the typical sort of undergrad cohort. So we were a little bit of like an outsider group and a little bit of a weird and wacky bunch. But I absolutely loved the degree. And then from there, I took a master's in specializing in politics and security in Southeast Asia and East Asia.
Did you know then that you wanted to live in Asia?
Yeah, I think so. I was very excited by the growth prospects that the region offered. It was a bit exotic to me, obviously, coming from the streets of South London. But yeah, really, even back in those days, it was clearly part of the world that was growing, that offered a lot of economic prospects. And so I wanted to give myself an edge and put myself out there, really, right from the outset. I think I was always thinking that I was always thinking just instinctively about the intersection between what would bring up a lot of opportunity for me in my career versus what would keep me, you know, passionate and motivated for over the long haul of a career. So that was it.
It sounds like you're planning quite early on in terms of career ambition wise, that you were already making a link between the time you were spending and studying at university and how that might develop into an interesting career for you. I mean, what previous job experiences had you had? You know, had you had any sense at that point at all what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Yeah, I enjoyed the routine of work experience and working in different environments. So even when I was at high school, I did a lot of temping jobs just in near where I lived. And, you know, I enjoyed the routine of that. I enjoyed earning my own money, as I didn't get a lot of pocket money from my parents. But even those jobs that some people might have considered rather mundane, I felt some sense of purpose in them. So there was one role with Lloyd's Register where I was just checking spreadsheets and validating the statistical probabilities on components in some nuclear power plants, right? So it was incredibly mundane spreadsheet work, basically model validation, probably the sort of thing that now be solved very quickly with an algorithm.
Yeah.
But I still felt like there's some sense of significance to what I'm doing here because, you know, you're talking about these infinitesimally small probabilities of certain componentry failing. But if it's a nuclear power station, you know, if you get the decimal point in the wrong place, it could be quite significant. So those sorts of roles were quite interesting. I also worked in the Croydon Council. And, you know, it was a very mundane role. But then at the end of it, they offered me they asked me if I'd like to be the manager of all the parks and playgrounds in Croydon. Well, at the time, it didn't really wasn't what I had in mind, but it was nice to feel that you were part of that community and that people valued what you were doing.
So what was your first real job when you graduated then?
Yeah, so I think the first job after university was in a political risk consultancy. So that was really why I did the master's in politics and security. I'd seen the role advertised at Control Risk Group. And so I spoke to my lecturer and said, how do I get a job like that? That sounds amazing, because that sounds like it's fusing all the knowledge that I've accumulated in my degree with something that's going to be more business focused and get me out there advising clients. So he said, well, you should do a master's first. And then in the course of doing the master's, I got to know some analysts and some people in research who were working with another small consultancy, and I ended up joining them after university.
Was that in the UK?
Yes, that was in the UK, but I was covering Asian markets. And that was a great baptism of fire. I mean, we were advising insurance syndicates and energy companies with interests in Asia. And I'd be involved in going to meet them and present on the political outlook for those countries. Also some advice on markets like Latin America. So it's very exotic. It was a very desk-bound job, actually, in reality. But again, lots of amazing conversations and getting thrust in at the deep end of talking to clients.
You've been to Asia at all at that point?
Well, yes, I traveled around just during my university years through India, Southeast Asia, Japan, and then as part of my degree, we had 1 year studying in Indonesia and Malaysia. Right. So, already got a taste for travel and a taste of the dynamism of the region.
So I'm curious to know, how and why did you move to Asia? What was the genesis of you moving to Asia?
So I moved from that political risk consulting role into a job in London with an upstart website publishing business, providing a lot of economic research and analysis on markets. And that firm has been acquired by other firms in recent years, but at the time it was called WMRC IHS Global Insight. And they sent me to Hong Kong in 2002 when they opened a sales office for Asia. And I was one of the first Asian analysts to travel out to Hong Kong in conjunction with us opening the office there.
So they sent you out, do you mean they sent you out to live there, or they just sent you out to scope out the office?
Yeah, they sent out the analysts one by one, 3 months at a time. So I was actually sent out for 3 months in 2002, then returned back to London. And then once I'd had a taste of Hong Kong, I was pretty keen to stay and get back there, built some connections, built a network, and managed to negotiate myself back working for IHS Global Insight, but on a contract basis or on a freelance contract. So I was continued to work for them for another year or two in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm. We often hear from candidates that they go somewhere for honor to comment and end up staying, or they go back and end up staying. In that 3 months that you were posted to Hong Kong, what was it about Hong Kong that made you think to yourself, actually, you said, I really want to get back here. Why did you really want to get back there? What was it about that's a comment that made you want to go and live there?
Yeah, so Hong Kong just offers such incredible possibilities. And I noticed a number of other guests on your podcast, Graham, have also spent time in Hong Kong. No one has a bad thing to say about Hong Kong, really. I mean, the opportunities are endless. The people you meet, there's so much dynamism out there, both personally, socially, and in the business world.
Let's take a deep dive here to consider what we've heard so far. It's clear that right from the beginning of his academic study, he was thinking about how what he was learning could positively impact his career options. His love of travel and his passion for the Asia region was a driving force, and both personal interest and career development worked in tandem and have provided him with a fulfilling life and career journey. We often say to candidates that if you can combine a personal passion with work, you strike gold. It's also a good reminder that relocating can often be because the move itself is the reason to go, not necessarily the job. This is something I ask candidates to consider often. What comes first? For some, it will be career. Others, the desire to experience somewhere new. Whatever the reason, grabbing the opportunity usually pays off, as it has with Mike. Let's return to hear more. So there you are in Hong Kong, you've made the move, and not long after you join KPMG. And I'm fascinated to know, given the background that you had at this point, what was it about joining a big four professional services firm that appealed to you? And also, how did that job come about?
So once I was in Hong Kong, I joined a branding agency, and we launched a magazine for accountants and rebranded the Accounting Society of Hong Kong into what's now known as the HKI CPA. Right. So as the editor of that magazine, I was both responsible for launching it, but then also managing the relationships with the Institute and through an editorial board and an advisory panel. So we launched that magazine in about 2006. It's still going today. Very successful title, really, that's well received in Hong Kong. And I hadn't really expected to be going into publishing a hard copy magazine like that, or into sort of contract publishing. But it was one of those opportunities where, when an opportunity like that arises, you wonder if this is actually going to lead to other things. And indeed it did. So the experience of managing that editorial panel, managing expectations, managing stakeholders, delivering something different from what people had previously been used to as part of a bigger transformation that was going on, was a great thing to be involved on. It was only a year of my career, but it was a year that I'm still very proud of and look back on quite fondly. And it was through that I got to know a number of people at KPMG and ended up being offered a role looking after KPMG's comms and publications and thought leadership as well.
And that's the link, isn't it? Because looking at your background, you wouldn't say you have the traditional background of a marketing, comms, business development, sales professional. But so what I'm interested in, and I think what other people would be interested in, is that, you know, it was that one year in publishing, that sort of sliding door moment where you thought to yourself, oh, this looks like an interesting job. It might lead somewhere, but I don't quite know where it will lead. But it was that that one year working in publishing that got you into a role where thought leadership and communications was part of the job. Is that why you were offered that job?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there was one other element to it, which was that having moved to Asia, I freed up some time with my deadlines being at a different time of the day to do some study. And I studied up on the CFA. And I had recognized that I needed a little more financial literacy as well. So I'd switched to Hong Kong. I picked up the CFA. That credentialized me to get the role in the accounting magazine with the agency.
Mm.
But it also then gave me just sufficient credibility to go into a firm like KPMG as well. And to speak the right language of those stakeholders as well.
And it's obviously been a fantastic move. You've been there 12 years.
Yeah, within KPMG, that time, I've spent about 4 or 5 years, firstly, in the marketing comms role in the China firm. Then I moved into one of the functional management roles in a regional role in Asia Pacific. Mm-hmm. So, and now just in more recently still, I've moved into a global role with deal advisory. So in my time, I feel like my career has been very varied, both inside and outside of KPMG. Mm. But I've been very lucky to have three quite distinct roles within my time in KPMG as well.
In that time, I mean, 18 years at KPMG in Asia, I mean, what changes have you seen in terms of marketing, comms, business development strategies for professional services firms?
Yeah, the scale and the complexity of our business has grown immensely. Mm-hmm. I think it used to be, we used to have a matrix model, right? We used to just be able to look in a very straightforward sense at functions and sectors, and how support functions like marketing, sales, BD would support and link across that matrix. So now we have specific products and solutions, and we have alliance relationships. So suddenly this two-dimensional matrix has become four, if not five or six dimensional. And that does become very, very challenging to navigate. It makes actually our roles even more important. But, you know, you have to, you know, you understanding how resources are being allocated and how initiatives are prioritized across that sort of a matrix organization does get very challenging internally, for sure. But yeah, I mean, in the time I've been looking after the regional role with risk consulting, that business grew threefold. So you have a far greater depth of capabilities across the region, where in some of our smaller countries in the past, we had very relatively limited resource, and they'd be leaning very heavily on some of the more mature practices for resource to deliver engagements locally.
Hi, I'm Katie Rosser, co-founder of Seldon Rosser, and we are passionate about helping people maximise the return on their own career investment. Visit seldonrosser.com to see a range of career opportunities and access career guides and market information such as salary surveys and articles. Our career goal is to help you get your next great job and make your own big splash in the world of work.
Did you find that it sounds like quite a lot of the roles that you've had with KPMG have required you to not have technical knowledge, but at least to grab the concepts of the services that they're offering and the industries that they're offering those services in? Do you think that your academic study, you know, the sort of highly complex study around politics and security and economic development, do you think the rigor of that study has helped you in your career in terms of being able to quickly find a way into technical subjects?
So, yes, Graham, you don't need to be a technical expert to be in a role like mine, in a professional services support role. But in a way, what people like me bring with that diversity of different work experience is something that a lot of people who are on a professional track probably don't have to the same extent. And actually, what I'd say to other people following some sort of path like this, and every path is so unique, is don't discount the value that you have drawing on experience from different organizations and sectors. That's actually very much part of the value that you can bring as an internal advisor or as a business development professional in a professional services firm. So I think that's really, a huge opportunity for people. You can build a lot of relationships and build a lot of trust internally on that basis. And people look at you for different ideas or left field thinking around how they approach problems.
One of the biggest challenges facing professional services, or all companies, but in our sector is professional services. And one of the biggest challenges facing them in the APAC region is geopolitics. And so, and you know, business development professionals in particular are expected to be able to have advice for stakeholders in the business about how to navigate client relationships in a very politically unstable environment. Do you think that you have the advantage because that was your sort of interest and background earlier on? And are you now seeing that it's sort of coming into play and you can, you know, really use that sort of experience that you have and that passion that you had?
I think you're probably right, Graham. I hadn't really thought about it like that. But yeah, for sure, when you're getting around some of the smaller markets like Indonesia or Thailand, you can, again, build up a lot of trust by just showing you have that little bit of understanding of the cultural or political dynamics of those markets. So for me, in hindsight, that was time well spent. It probably seemed a little esoteric at the time to be studying that as a degree. But yeah, I'm very happy that I've been able to apply that knowledge, or have that knowledge, although my degree is a long time ago now, to still have that backdrop of knowledge around the region. I think it's been very helpful for me in building relationships and just, you know, almost intuitively navigating certain situations. It's almost a calming feeling as well to know that some of these geopolitical disputes have been evolving for a long time. They haven't suddenly arisen. And in some respects, they may be coming to a head right now. There's a lot of really critical issues coming to a head in the global geopolitical environment. But these things do play out slowly. You can take time to see how they're going to influence business decisions the risks going forward for businesses.
Is it getting harder to sell professional services, do you think?
I think right now customer expectations are clearly heightened and there's a lot more choice. So, yes, I think that maybe client loyalty can't be taken for granted as much. There are different stakeholders in terms of procurement, guiding decisions. The singular trusted advisor or expert smart man consulting model is a thing of the past. So what we have to be is good networkers and activators to bring people together and build, you know, broader relationships to sell larger or more enduring, deliver more enduring value to our clients. So yes, in a way, we're in a brave new world in consulting, and there are many new competitors emerging as well.
You said at the beginning about moving to Hong Kong and there was a lot to like about Hong Kong, and nobody ever finds a bad word to say about Hong Kong. Hong Kong has been hit quite hard in the last 3 or 4 years from a talent perspective. We've seen a lot of people who were living there have left Hong Kong during the pandemic and after pandemic. There seems to be a sense of it coming back, though. I've heard more people now who've want to go back to Hong Kong, people who left saying, actually, I'd quite like to get back there. What advice would you give to somebody who is thinking about a career in Asia, not specifically Hong Kong, but just a career in Asia? What advice would you give to anybody listening who's sitting in, you know, London or Melbourne, Sydney, thinking to themselves, actually, maybe I would like to go and do something in Asia? What would you say to them?
Well, I'd say go for it, obviously, Graham. I mean, it's just, you know, I've got absolutely no regrets. I am pleased to hear you say that you're hearing people coming back or expressing interest in coming back to Hong Kong, because it has been a tough few years. And while we have seen a lot of people leaving, I also have a lot of long-term friends here who have committed to staying, much as I am. I've one or two colleagues who've just returned in the last 6 months after trying to settle elsewhere or living in a rather uncertain transient phase during COVID. Mm. And actually that only reinforced for them the decision that Hong Kong was a great place to be based for the next few years of their career. So yeah, still lots of opportunities. And if you know Hong Kong, you'll know that there are certain areas on a Wednesday night at the Hong Kong races, if you go down there, you wouldn't think anything had changed. There's still a lot of young people out having fun and a lot of people turning up here looking to build their careers. So it's still a great place and a very, very easy place to settle in and build a network and make lasting friends.
Very sociable place. I think one of the things that we've always found about Hong Kong is whenever we've placed people in Hong Kong, they always hit the ground running with a network sort of almost immediately. People are very happy to reach out and connect, even if they're working in the same industry, even if they're working for competitors. You tend to find that there's much more of a sort of friendship group in the industry. Have you found that yourself?
Yeah, of course. And, you know, we met Graham through Appsmo all those years ago, which you were sponsoring at the time.
Yeah.
And there's a very open community there for sure. It's still a very easy place to do that. And, you know, one of the things that I really had to make an intention to do after the COVID period lifted was to rebuild some of my relationships and the networks that I'd probably neglected a bit. And that was partly because we're in a semi-lockdown, but it was also partly because I was in a regional role and I was building relationships regionally. But as we came out of COVID, like, hang on, I've got so many relationships that are valuable to me here, right here on my doorstep in Hong Kong. And it's time to start reactivating those as well. So that's been actually a really fun part of the last year or so living here in Hong Kong.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, given that you've had sort of 12 years experience in a major professional services firm, given everything that's going on in the world, I'm really interested to know what your audacious prediction might be for where you think roles in marketing, business development, communications in professional services is going. Like, what do you... If you could predict 5-10 years into the future, what type of people do you think these firms are going to be hiring?
Graham, I'm not really sure of the answer to that question. I definitely don't have a crystal ball. One thing that's of interest to me is how AI will allow roles to either be consolidated or eliminated in a sense. So, AI will allow one person to effectively perform four or five different roles. Does that mean that the sub-specialisms of marketing and business development do get consolidated into one role where you essentially have a team of AI assistants? But clearly, AI is more than just about generative AI and using AI to create great copy and create content more quickly. I mean, it's going to change all of the processes underlying the way we operate in marketing and business development functions as well. And that will essentially shape, what the future roles in marketing and business development look like.
One of the things that we've heard a lot from the CMO community is that with AI stripping out quite a lot of the process of roles, it means that the roles that will be left will be more advisory, strategic roles. So businesses will hire people who have got the knowledge, the confidence, the commercial acumen to be really good strategic advisors on how they should play in the market, how they should attract and win and retain clients, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think, this is a question I ask quite a lot of senior people in business development and marketing, do you think that professional services have provided enough learning and development along the way for that generation? Because it's all very well and good to say we now need strategic advisors. They haven't been given the opportunity to be strategic in their roles. Where does that come from? There's no answer to this question. I just wonder what your thoughts are on where you think that might come from in the future.
Yeah, well, I think the implication there is that everyone as a young marketer or BD professional should be grasping the opportunities to get involved in strategy development, challenging leaders at the right moment as to how they do that. And I think everyone has the opportunity to do that, but perhaps when you're more junior, your window of opportunity is narrow and you've got to seize that moment when you can. So that is probably the challenge. Now, I mean, in my own experience, I've moved from a role in clients and markets into a role in one of the divisions of advisory. So I've straddled the firm in that sense, and I've benefited from a lot of the training that's been made available in our firm on both fronts. So for me, that's been a fabulous opportunity. So I guess my advice to others were, if you can see that opportunity to straddle that, bridge that gap. Not that there's a huge distinction, if you like, in a firm like KPMG between the business and the those sorts of functions. But if you can get yourself across all of the resources, the training, and the strategies behind how each of those business lines are operating, you're putting yourself in a very good position as an internal advisor as well.
How do you stay relevant? Like, what do you read or listen to that sort of keeps you updated with what's going on in this very fast-paced, changing world that we live in?
For me, my main sort of external source of information would be Bloomberg. I've got a subscription to Bloomberg, which for me provides the right sort of blend of commentary between markets and broader trends and geopolitics. So for me, just keeping in the right disciplines around Bloomberg, Financial Times, getting into that routine 15 minutes every day just to see where things are tracking is key. And then in my case, because I've worked through different parts of the organization, picking up a lot of different threads of what's happening, you bring that together just to bring the right questions to your stakeholders as to where we're going in our strategy.
My final question to you, and it's a sort of reminiscing question. So put yourself right back into the day you walked into the lecture hall at Hull University with that eclectic group of students that you talked about earlier. If you'd have known then that 15, 18, 20 years later, you'd be living and working in Hong Kong, you'd be working for one of the best global professional services firms in the world, what would you have said to yourself?
I think I'd give myself a pat on the back. I'd be delighted to know where I've ended up. It's been absolutely brilliant. So I might have some advice for my past self, but there's no regrets at all. I look back at that time and really, of course, I was somewhat naive. I didn't really have too much idea of what a good salary was or what a salary trajectory looks like in different careers. At that time, no one was talking about data and analytics because the volumes of data weren't there to do those things. But of course, in hindsight, you know, if you're sort of embarking on your career, there's so much. If you're thinking through those lenses, you can put yourself in a really good position. So
I think the key thing that I've listened to while you've been talking today is that you never stop learning.
Yeah, absolutely, Graham. I think that comes with the territory. We're jumping through different roles. And embracing the opportunities that they provided to me. And one of the decisions behind me taking each of those roles was, what would I learn? Where would it lead me? And sometimes the answer is you don't know, but you know that in your instincts, it's going to offer you opportunities to learn and open other doors. You might not know what they are, but for me, you know, in hindsight, I can say that those switches, those sliding door moments worked out really well. So.
They certainly did. Yeah. They absolutely did for you. And we've certainly learned a lot by listening to your career. Thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. And good luck with your new global job.
Thank you, Graham. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.